introduced. I actually represent two organizations. My primary faculty appointments in the College of Dental Medicine down at the Medical University, but I also am associated with the South Carolina Rural Health Research Center at the University of South Carolina, which is one of seven rural health research centers funded by HRSA's Office of Rural Health Policy. A quick shameless plug that tomorrow is National Rural Health Day, so find your way in the country tomorrow. Get out of the city and go into the woods. My co-authors today are Christine Viscusio, who is the former state dental director in our state, and Joni Nelson. As a matter of disclosure, I have no financial relationships to report as part of this presentation. So the essence of this morning's presentation centers around how South Carolina developed and responded to the academic health department model that the IOM suggested that we all embrace back in 2003. So I'm going to go through very quickly how we formed our relationship and what the manifestations of that process has been. Just as a quick point, South Carolina has exacerbated shortages of dental professionals, so access to care and oral health is very problematic in our state. As a reminder, the IOM back in 2000, actually as far back as 1988, but again in 2003, basically said if we want a rising tide to lift all boats in public health, schools of public health and health departments have got to come together to pool their assets so that we have this continuum of training and practice that is evidence-based. And the Association of Schools of Public Health said, we're not doing such a good job of that. So back in 2006, we partnered with our state's public health agency, specifically our Division of Oral Health. About that time, they had received a CDC infrastructure grant. About $15,000 of that was used as a subcontract, and we worked very closely with the state's Division of Oral Health and our public health agency, using a collaborative leadership model with our state's coalition and advisory council to develop a comprehensive state oral health plan. This is a really important slide. Everything I'm about to say follows this slide. We used proceed to provide a theoretical framework, not just for the state oral health plan, but for the process of developing our priorities and our activities and basically providing a blueprint for where we wanted South Carolina to be in 5 years. And just as a reminder, this is the version of proceed that we used back in 2006. And what you see in teeny tiny font, you just have to trust me on this, are the various constructs that are operationalized in ways that we can measure in our state oral health plan. And it runs the gamut of addressing specific populations, to community water fluoridation, to access to care, to oral health literacy. It was indeed comprehensive. We did make a couple of rules when we came together, both as an academic institution, a public health agency, and a community-based coalition, that we would, in addition to observing the rules of proceed, be respectful of some mutually agreed upon guiding principles. First and foremost, we would not let funding drive the mission of our public health agency or the coalition or the contents of the state oral health plan. We tried to remain focused as we developed that plan. We tried to remain focused to those goals and objectives and not engage in mission creep or get distracted by bright, shiny dollars. We also agreed, as a good academic health department model, that dissemination of what we've learned is important. If it's not published or presented at important conferences like this, it's as though it never happened. We focused on consensus building. Lord knows we had more things that divided us than united us early on. We decided we would focus on those things that unite us and check those things that divide us at the door. And as the political will evolved, we would then tackle those things. We were not turned off by small funding opportunities. We saw them as opportunities to generate credibility-building efforts that would then subsequently leverage larger resources. And we also were respectful of each other's expectations. They knew if they wanted to partner with our School of Public Health, I could only play if it led to scholarly output, because that's how I keep my job. They could only stay engaged with me if it led to epidemiological improvements, because that demonstrated their relevance. So here's the punchline. So as a result of this plan that was developed in 2006, we have achieved numerous policy and practice achievements. We have generated and gotten accolades from Pew. We've had legislation passed. We've had treatment guidelines reviewed and adopted. We've had oral health integrated into our Department of Education health and safety standards. We've been recognized by AAPD and Head Start as a dental home leadership state. We've had Medicaid reimbursement changes. You name it, we tackled it and we accomplished it. The way we were able to make these things happen in the absence of any state dollars appropriated to this plan or to our Division of Oral Health in our public health agency, our plan and our strategic alignment through our partnerships, that $15,000 I talked about, leveraged $5.2 million between 2006 and funding into 2018. And I have to report that this number needs to inch up to the 5.6 mark, because we just got a CMS grant to address oral health training for certified nursing assistants in long-term care facilities. So we continue to reap the benefits of what was a long but detailed and collaborative planning process. But I think the piece that gets us the most excited is the epidemiological impact of this plan. So this is sort of hot off the presses. We have been doing our oral health needs assessment in partnership with ASTDD using consistent methodology, so there's been no changes in the way we collect the data and the way we measure it, but we are seeing the benefits of all of this hard work, basically from the leadership of our public health agency in partnership with our academic friends, using the coalition as our important partners in the field. We've seen great improvements in Carrie's experiences, so an 11% drop since 2002. We've seen sealants increase. Admittedly, we're still not even at the Healthy People 2010 goals, but for South Carolina, a third of the kids with sealants is pretty doggone good. We're pretty pleased with that. But, and we expected those improvements because we got very aggressive, particularly on fluoride, both in the water and in the primary care setting. What we did not expect to see in such pronounced ways is the significant drop in untreated caries and treatment urgencies. This was a wow. In fact, I didn't trust it. We ran the data several times because I thought this just can't be right, and it turned out that it was. And as if this sizable drop wasn't good enough, I am so pleased to report to you on the untreated caries and the treatment urgencies. We have actually eliminated some important disparities in our state. So we found no race differences, no ethnicity differences, and what was really shocking to me is no differences on certain income indicators. So we were able to take our oral health needs assessment data and link it over to our Medicaid claims and over to our educational data. So I wanted to see if free and reduced lunch kids were still having some disparities, and I am pleased to report that they do not. Not at least when it comes to untreated caries. What we do continue to see is what you see in the published literature. We still see the disparities in caries experiences with minority children, low-income children, and our rural children still experiencing caries at much greater rates than their peers, but we've eliminated some significant disparities in those access to care indicators. And I have to say it's because we were extremely aggressive around improving access to care for underserved kids. Regrettably, the common disparity that weaves across this chart, with the exception of sealants, is rural. So we still see pronounced disparities for rural children in our state, and you saw how our map lit up, and that was really where we have both the intersection of high numbers of rurality and high numbers of poverty. So there were some great takeaways for us through the oral health needs assessment and some great opportunities to really tweak the next generation of our state oral health plan. We absolutely cannot take our eyes off the ball. The things we've put into place are clearly working, clearly moving us in the right direction. But we still have a lot of work to do on sealants. We still don't do so swell in South Carolina on sealants, in spite of the leadership that our state's public health agency is providing around sealants. And again, disparities still remain for our rural children. So what are we doing? So it's a part of the next generation of our state oral health plan, and actually some of this is referenced in that 2006 version. We got aggressive around pursuing funding to address those disparities. So we have a HRSA Oral Health Workforce Grant that specifically has three parts that are really hammering away on the rural piece. So one is partnering with Safety Net Solutions to come in and help both our community health centers in rural communities as well as private practitioners to revisit their business model so that they can grow their capacity and continue to improve access to care for rural. Just anecdotally and without giving away names, they came in and found $250,000 on the table like that in one community health center just because the no-show policy and the emergency policies for that organization were written in such a way that was causing them to be ineffectual and unproductive around that particular aspect of their business model. So finding that $250,000 will be nice, and hopefully we're helping them parlay that into better capacity, better productivity, so access is improved. The other piece of that grant is water fluoridation. So I'm putting on my rural advocate hat, and Lord knows I appreciate the CDC and the tremendous leadership they've brought to our state around community water fluoridation, because we are continuously under assault, because South Carolina's kind of libertarian, kind of weird. And we let weird people in, but anyhow. So we've gotten aggressive around the advocacy, but the water fluoridation upgrade mini grants that are available through our public health agency through CDC dollars have population thresholds, which by definition means our rural water systems are ineligible to receive these funds. So we're using these dollars and have concentrated the expenditures of those dollars in that part of the map that you saw that lit up that has tremendous shortages. I presented on the second bullet yesterday, so I'm not going to talk too much about it, but we have DentaQuest Foundation dollars to improve the efficacy of home visitation programs in rural areas to address the early childhood caries component for our rural families. We are working on a national program. We have a partnership right now with the DentaQuest Institute to pilot test something called ROADS, which stands for the Rural Oral Health Advancement and Disparities Solution Project. That is specifically working with rural healthcare systems. It focuses on interprofessionalism and alternative treatment models. We're pilot testing it in 4 states, and hopefully that will be available to your state very soon. As a matter of good science, Dr. Jan Probst, who's in the room, is director of the South Carolina Rural Health Research Center. She and I are updating a report that we produced back in 2010, which is a very nice chart book that delineates the disparities that are experienced by rural kids relative to their oral health. And that chart book should be available to you by summer of next year. If you'd like to see the current version that is based on the National Center for Health Statistics, the National Survey of Children's Health data, it's available at our website. Just Google South Carolina Rural Health Research Center and you'll find us. Then finally, as we think about the sustainability of our academic health department model, it's important for you to know that many of the players have changed. So Chris Viscusio is a co-presenter on this. She recently retired, and we were very pleased to recruit back home. We call him home. He's actually from New Orleans. Ray Lala retired from federal service and is back in South Carolina, a place where he originally served as the dental director. So he's back home in South Carolina, and what has really sort of evolved as this academic health department model continues to be nurtured, while he is at our public health agency 4 days a week, he spends 1 day a week with me down at the College of Dental Medicine. So having a programmatic role at the College of Dental Medicine with me in our new Division of Population Health, I think, really codifies what started out as a conceptual product into something that's palpable and has a web presence, actually. And so, as the introduction mentioned, I am starting a new division of population health at the dental school while I maintain my relationship with the School of Public Health and the Research Center. Our task in this new division is threefold. It is to re-examine curriculum for our students, to make sure that they are getting not just good public health competencies, but safety net practice competencies, cultivating a passion for safety net practice, but it's also building a research program. But one part that I'm learning and loving is the whole translational piece. So there's lots of really cool clinical innovations that are being generated in our dental school, but they don't seem to make it to public health or safety net settings. So Dr. Lala and I are tasked with making that happen. So just wrapping up in my final breath, things that have really worked for us in South Carolina, I cannot overemphasize the importance of deliberate relationship building, triangulating academia with public health agency, with a community-based coalition, using a theoretically driven strategic plan to make things happen, and doing it while holding hands. That's about the best way I can say it. And Hannah just gave me the finger, so I'm stopping. Not a bad finger, but stop. And I can take a couple questions, right? Just a couple questions?
Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you.
Quick question.
Yes. So what we're doing that HRSA really liked our oral health workforce grant, we've been giving out monies to upgrade and update equipment, and following CDC and ADA's recommendations to the letter, fly under the radar and be cautious, we're sort of doing a proactive attempt at warding off the crazies. And so what we're doing is we're creating advocacy teams. So as we're making those community awards, we have a great curriculum that's led by our state's dental association, and they're going in and training at least one pediatrician or a pediatric serving provider, a dentist, the water system operator, and somebody from Head Start, so that if a threat comes into one of our rural towns in particular, these four people are the most trusted when it comes to kids' health, and having them have each other's backs has been very important. What Dr. Lala and I are working on is a continuing education platform. Our fear is we do this, complacency grows because they may not have an assault, so we continue to push the stories that we all get about a certain town coming under assault and how folks have responded and what has worked and what hasn't. But yes, in fact, quick story, Aiken is a big horse town. Horse died. The wealthy person said it was because of fluoride in the water. I mean, you just don't even know what goes on. Pediatricians are definitely doing more. I'll answer the last and then go back to your first. Pediatricians are definitely doing more. We still have a lot of work to do in terms of educating family practice, and that's really what you see mostly in rural. And we had this conversation yesterday. In South Carolina, when we look at the claims data, in our state you have to get that fluoride varnish as a part of an EPSDT visit. Cannot be as a part of episodic care. And so the problem is not the fluoride varnish. The problem is getting the kids in for their well-child visits. We hit a low of about a third of the kids getting their well-child visits, which directly impacts their ability to get fluoride varnish. But we have regionally some fantastic pediatricians who are champions. Our Q-tip and chipper initiative made fluoride varnish a priority. And so we are in the process now of doing rapid dissemination. Our catch community has really decided to own and champion this, and we have resources to make this type of education happen.
I've had family medicine physicians say to me, that's not my problem.
Well, we have had a couple to say, at what point do I become a dentist? But so we kind of have to walk them back.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin.
Thank you.
I